Radio Reverb, Brighton Festival 2017. Now, all of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2017 with Melissa Dennett on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Alita Dennett. This is Radio Reverb's Brighton Festival Special.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals. We're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeated 10pm and 8am. And this week we'll be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, creators and the people who make it happen.
On today's show, we're going to be taking a walk around some of Brighton's familiar locations, but seen in a very different way, with a unique app. We'll be meeting a choreographer who brings the audience onto the stage, Eek. We'll be hearing about a trilogy of plays which dissect the election of Trump, Double Eek, and taken to the seas for five short blasts. That's in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, kindly supported by the Brighton Festival. Starting the programme now, kicking off with Brighton music, this is New Tropics and The Sky at Night. Starting off the programme with Brighton music from New Tropics, that is The Sky at Night. You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. This is the strong and stable Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. And a hello also to our listeners who are listening on DAB in Sussex and Surrey via Upload Radio. So consider yourself waved at if you're listening to us on Upload Radio.
Now, five short blasts sees audiences taken out by boat from Brighton Marina to get an up-close and real sense of life on the waves. Originally conceived by Madeline Flynn and Tim Humphrey to focus on marine life and work based around Shoreham Harbour, it moved to Brighton Marina due to tidal complications. There was nothing stable about this morning's trip out on the high seas. I was up bright and early and took to the waves.
Attention, please. All passengers.
Now's a good time to turn the phone onto aeroplane mode.
Five short passes.
Okay.
To Shoreham will shortly be departing.
My name's Vindy Green. I'm from Five Short Blasts. I'm based in Melbourne, Australia, and I work with Tim Humphreys and Madeline Flynn, who are the creators of this artwork.
So tell me about what the experience is. What have you set out to do here?
So Five Short Blasts is an experience of a city and from the perspective of the water. So we've created a version of Shoreham, the town, which is a bit further down the coast from Brighton Marina. So it's an experience for audience to come and get an understanding of the waterways, which is part of their environment that they live in and walk past and see every day, and to get a bit of an understanding of the people who live and work in that waterway.
You wake up the next morning and you feel like you've just done battle with Mike Tyson sometimes.
I think since I've been on the crew in the last year, we had one long one that was like 9 hours. So it's interesting to see how your body reacts to that really low. 1 minute you're sitting at your desk, the next minute you're at sea for 9 hours.
I got lucky because coming down here today, the experience we're out and it's nice weather, it's calm, it's pleasant. So viewing it from the sea was a bit like being sort of on a tourist trip to start with.
Oh, it's incredibly changeable. It's as changeable as the weather itself. We have days where we've been up to force 5 and almost to 6 in when the gale is really strong and the boat is rising up and down out of the water 3 or 4 metres because once you go out of the breakwater, out through the breakwater, out into the channel, it gets incredibly rough. They start using words like really lumpy seas. It's a really bouncy sea today, or it's quite choppy today. But it can be incredibly disconcerting. And people have been feeling a little kind of nauseous and a little changed by the experience.
Heave to. Come roll. Maintain visual
The listening experience is very much created by the natural environment and what's happening in the area around you, as well as the composed score that sits in the work. So one day you might be like, we had a rescue happen yesterday. We had the boat that was going out was called to rescue a sailboat that needed to be brought back into harbour. And there were 2 distress calls going on at the same time. So the lifeboats went to the one which was further out, but our vessel, the Sea Breeze, that we were running our show on, was the closest one to the yacht in distress. So it's maritime law that if you are the closest vessel, it's your obligation to go and rescue. No one was in danger, no one was hurt. It wasn't a life-threatening situation. Just about 5 minutes or so while we paused to take a moment to determine exactly what's the situation we're in here. And that became, for that day, it's part of the work. That intersection of recreation, of activity, of industry, and of this whole universe of marine life.
He stirred the guts in the sea. Gulls whirled greedily above our pink foam plate. His bloody fish gut fingers.
The elephant in the room is obviously the change of venue. Mm. How has that been for you, and what kind of response have you had from people from that change? Because we should have been at Shoreham, we're by the restaurants at Brighton Marina.
Exactly. It is a significant change. It came very late in the day as well. It was an unavoidable change. It was about safety of getting passengers on and off boats, and it was about the ability of skippers to be able to land at the jetties down there. And it became apparent that we wouldn't be able to run the entire season. And so the move to Brighton Marina, while artistically wouldn't have been the original choice, practically and responsibly it's the right choice. What we do like, though, is that we're bringing Shoreham down to Brighton Marina, and that's a really lovely thing. We're still hearing all those voices, we're still hearing all those stories. And the people from Shoreham who know that environment and know those people and know the kind of reference points that are touched on by some of the text that's been created for the work by Tim and Julia Crouch, people really respond to that, and it's fantastic. And so it's great that it's, even though we've had a change of location, the work is still well and truly rooted in Shoreham, and it's very much, Shoreham is at the heart of the work.
And 5 short blasts run through Sunday. Lots of the slots are fully booked, but as of this afternoon, and I checked with the box office in the past hour, there are some tickets available for Tuesday morning sailing. So if you're listening to this on Monday evening, then you can get in touch with the box office and get a ticket for tomorrow morning,
because
it's going to be lovely weather. And it's in lovely weather, it's a great experience.
I have to ask, were there sick bags?
They did say it's very calm today, but we do have sick bags if anyone needs them, in a kind of sense of no one will need them. And I thought, no, I will. I get nauseous if my bath starts kind of, you know, move a thigh in the bath, you know. So I was fine, but I think if I'd have been on board during the 3 to 4 metre waves when it was a little bit windy last week, yeah, I might not have found it as pleasant.
I'm actually really jealous of you having done that, because I haven't actually done it, but I was interested hearing your report. What a remarkable story about having to rescue a boat while they were out there.
It is interesting that happened. And I did ask after the interview as to whether they'd sort of said to people, just let you know, this is not part of... And they did sort of stop for 5 minutes to just check everything and make sure they were OK to continue, that there wasn't an emergency that demanded, you know, to change completely what was happening. But made it all the more interesting for people.
Well, I'm glad you did ask the question about it being at Shoreham, because as you pointed out, it originally was going to be at Shoreham, now moved to the marina. How did that actually work, though? Because a lot of the stories were actually about Shoreham. Did it work for you? Did you suspend your disbelief?
No, in that I because I had bought a ticket very early when they went on sale, thinking, that sounds great. I love a bit of industrial sense.
Industrial porn, we all love that, don't we?
Exactly. And I don't know Shoreham Harbour. I don't live that end of town. So I was looking forward to that front. So I went along thinking, how's this going to be? And also, so when you're on it, a lot of the recordings and the stories are Shoreham related. Mm. But, I mean, to be honest, you do go out quite away from the marina. So you're looking across the sea. But at the same time, it was designed to fit in with certain specific locations at certain times. It doesn't jar, it just doesn't fit like it would have fitted like a foot in a flip-flop. had it been that?
A foot in a rubber glove.
Something like that. So it did, you kind of think, it would have been lovely if this had been at Shoreham. But it was great. I mean, I went with two friends and all of us said, what a treat to be out on a boat. And also, I thought we were going to be on a boat with like sort of 10 other people. And in fact, there was four of us on the boat.
Bijou.
And you get given a cup of tea and a flapjack, which is fine when it's calm at sea. So if you fancy an early morning cup of tea and a flapjack and some interesting visuals and a little bit of live music at some point, which I won't give away, get yourself a ticket for tomorrow morning because everything else is sold out.
Okay, terrific. So it's five short blasts and I go to the Brighton Festival website, brightonfestival.org. I've got more Brighton music now. This is Fresh School Buddha.
Jump up, jump up. This your one pressing is a rigger. What them wanna understand?
Yeah, more music from Brighton there. That's Fresh School Buddha on Radio Reverb, the Brighton Festival special. And now The Hum is an app which takes you to familiar locations in Brighton and makes you see them in quite a different way.
Yeah, I tried it out last week. I did three of the locations in Brighton Station and loved it and recommended that you download it and have a go. Have you done that, Melissa?
Which I did. I was very good. I did my homework.
Did your homework? Good.
I did it today and I went to one in Waterstones where you head up to the third floor of Waterstones and you look out the window, fourth floor, and you press play. And what it is, it's a meditation on people crossing the road. And about people going from A to B, people being individual or in groups. And there was one part of it, because what you're doing is obviously you're looking at people just going around their day-to-day things while the narrative is talking to you.
And it's a pre-recorded narrative that doesn't necessarily relate to what's going
precisely,
on.
Precisely. Yeah. There's a ticking sound because you're right by the clock tower. But there was one part of it when the voice was saying, did she press the button? Did she press the button? And precisely at that moment, a woman went up and pressed the button. It's like, it was spooky. It was synchronicity. I thought it was fabulous because it's a kind of people-watching app from that point of view, and I thought it was really lovely and really, really enjoyed it. I found it fascinating.
It legitimised you being a nosy woman just staring at people, basically.
I don't need legitimacy to do that. Anyway, our reporter Alicia Theobald went to try it out herself and she met some of the other people experiencing The Hum.
My name is Holly Simpson and I am about to take The Hum. I'm about to listen to The Hum app and I'm very intrigued by this because it's something very different, and we are now travelling to the first location, which is a photo booth, I believe. I just went to the first location, which was in the photo booth, and it was very strange listening to audio and just sitting there, but it was actually really fun because you could obviously hear the sound of the guy talking to us whilst we were in the location.
Well, I just was outside the Tesco sliding doors, and there's a piece in the text which says, you know, are you sure you want to go in? And are you sure about your direction and your certainty about the direction you're heading in? And at that very second, split second, somebody went to the door and immediately turned back. And I thought, how do they do that?
What I'm enjoying about this experience so far is that it's giving me a little bit of time to reflect. And just by looking at certain objects and hearing a very poetic little piece, it's really interesting. I've never done anything really like this before. It's a very unique way of getting people out and about and around Brighton. So you were part of The Hum doing one of the voices. How was that experience for you?
It was actually a really fascinating experience because I think we don't often listen to our own voices all the time. And I'm a dance artist, so especially doing that for me was a really different kind of venture. And I haven't heard my voice yet in the project, so I'm a little bit nervous about that, but also excited because you can't, when you are sitting in a recording studio, just recording text without the background music and the scene, you don't really know what that's going to be like. So yeah, I'm excited.
So how did you find the experience of The Hum?
It was really fun walking around the street and finding, like, discovering each little moment, and I really enjoyed the bits where I got to interact with the world in a very different way.
What do you think worked the best, or what hit you most personally?
The scene in the photo booth hit me most because it was sitting and look at my reflection in the thing, and how he asked you to sort of surrender into continuing to look at yourself and then coming at you with lots of more intense things about what this is about. I really like that, and the thing with the automatic doors. Like, anything that had us to play with the outside world was really interesting. Well, I've only done three of them, so I'm interested in hearing the rest of what's on the thing.
So the eagle-eared amongst you may well have noticed that our reporter there was Holly Simpson, and she was reporting on The Hum, and we're going to be hearing more about it later on the show. But just to let you know, The Hum app runs through to Sunday. It's around central Brighton, and you can download it for free at brightonfestival.org. And it definitely comes with a strong and stable recommendation from Rebecca Sandals and myself. Sorry, I'm going to drive her mad with this. And I have to say thank you very much for Thameslink for supporting our festival reporters. You are listening to the Radio Reverb Brighton Festival special with Rebecca Sandals and Melita Dennett. And choreographer Theo Klinkhard premiered his dance piece With a Difference, This Bright Field. It's coming up at the Brighton Festival on Thursday. And now I say it's With a Difference because it's divided into two very different parts. And Theo joins us now. Thanks for coming on Radio Reverb.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
So tell us about these two parts.
Yeah, so the life of this piece started about 4 years ago when an organisation in Nottingham, Dance 4, charged me with making a dance piece for the larger dance stage. And I was trying to think about how I could do it differently. And the last piece that I'd made was very much an intimate work for an audience of 60. So I got really into this proximate audience and being able to play with detail and tone and texture and kinds of performance. And I was just trying to see how I could work that into something which was going to be end on, seen from the auditorium. So the idea is that in the first part, the audience are on stage and they get to be literally as close as we are right now with the performers and kind of get to know them. So there's a kind of familiarity which is created so that in the second part, you might look at this group from a distance through the lens of the individual.
That sounds a little bit daunting to me, to be an audience member doing that. I'm sure as a performer, it's not, it's just kind of natural. But
I think the performers might be a bit more daunted by the thought of people like you walking up and staring at them, Melita.
Thank you.
Well, we're doing our very best to make that first part really warm. So all the decisions about the sound and the invite, if you like, there's also soft cushions now, so you should feel very welcome. So it kind of builds an inviting space for the audience.
You've talked about the piece examining the objective and the subjective gaze. This positions the audience in a very different way to what we're accustomed to. And how do you want to sort of break that apart and that whole idea of, you know, the audience just as the passive onlooker?
I think there's something about, if I think about reviews of performance, I think often you get this kind of like written in absolutes, like the work was this, it was that. And I think what's often not highlighted or framed enough is that that's a particular subjective viewpoint. So I think I keep trying to make work now where I'm really highlighting that. So no audience member is going to have the same experience of the first part. The dancers have a series of stage flats, so they are carving and editing your experience. So literally there might be a kind of private dance. It's almost just performed for you. It's not daunting and it's not sexual. just say, you private dancer.
You'll have disappointed some people there.
they are kind of editing and they have agency, if you like. So they have this kind of license to make decisions. It's improvised, the first part. So they're very much conducting it. It's seemingly not got an author, this first part. And the second part is very much me very clearly making kind of social or choreographic conditions on the groups. You're seeing them working under or within conditions. And I think there's a kind of level of gentle political commentary going on there.
I'm wondering then if this is kind of, you're interpreting it in your own way because you'll see it differently as an audience member. Is this meant to be an uplifting experience, a challenge? I mean, is it fun? Is it not fun?
It's funny. You know, I normally make...
I need a box to put this
in. I know.
The fun box.
I'm normally absolute fun box person. And the last piece I made, which was actually at the concert hall in the Dome, was for a Cuban company, Danza Contemporánea de Cuba. And it was absolutely a celebration by the end. And then through this last year, I've been kind of like, this is not a time necessarily for catharsis. It's a time of coming together, mobilizing, empowerment. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I need to challenge this idea that dance work needs to end with resolve and resolution. Mm-hmm. So for this one, I've really been kind of going, without it being aggressive, what is it to kind of unite, come together with all of that difference, with all of that kind of personal, independent viewpoint for the audience and the performers inside of it? What is it like to come together with that diversity and to have a kind of mobilized call to arms, if you like? And it's funny that this last week I've spent the whole time on social media getting young people to vote, and I suddenly made this connection with my work. I was like, oh my God, it's kind of somehow related to this kind of will or wish to mobilize at the moment.
It's also an interesting concept in terms of when you watch a dance piece, normally you're looking at the dance piece as a whole. You will pick out individual performers, but you'll see the piece as a whole. And I guess with this one, people will be looking at their, if you like, their own dancer that they worked with, predominantly.
Absolutely. And I think that there is... But there's many ways to make work. But what doesn't interest me is putting myself at the centre of the piece and thinking of, I always use this analogy of an onion. So I don't think of the dancers as layers of myself and versions of me. I'm trying to tap into what makes them move and what makes them different. The idea being that that's going to create more connections with different kinds of audience members, with who they relate to, even just on an energetic level. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, more connections between performers and audience. And I just stand outside and I think of myself like a host, if you like.
I've been looking at the videos for this and it looks absolutely visually stunning. I mean, the costumes and the sound appear to be as much stars of the show as the performers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I don't necessarily make theatrical work, but I really enjoy playing with these different elements. And I'm not a trained designer, but I have been working for 15 years in opera and theatre and live art and dance as a designer. And then also I work with this great composer, James Keane, who is from Brighton.
He's,
Brighton's own. And he's actually got his 14-year-old son, who's a Dorothy Stringer student, Archie Keane. Big shout out to Archie Keane. So Archie is singing this beautiful, it's a little bit like Sigur Rós or Jonsi,
wow,
you know, this
yeah.
kind of very
oh,
delicate sound.
Love that. She's a massive fan of Jonsi.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got that kind of tone, kind of something very delicate, which, I don't know, taps into some emotional landscape.
And James has a link to The Hum as well, doesn't
exactly.
he?
Exactly. So he worked with Nick Sanderland and kind of developed a kind of sound world which supports the text, as I understand it.
Exactly, yeah.
Dance is still a medium that people do shy away from, and you know, this is yeah. this is a theme that I've kind of referred to, you know, as too difficult. I mean, yeah. for me personally, I got into dance in the 80s with people like Extemporary Dance and Lloyd Newsome, Nigel Charnock, who actually explored yeah. queer culture
yeah.
through dance. And they used a lot of music from bands like Wire, so kind of like your sort of punk rock ethos. And then, of course, Michael Clark came through and later and became the enfant terrible of contemporary yeah. dance. Are you inspired by people like that in your work?
I actually teach Michael Clark Company and I teach Deviate as well, Lloyd Newsome's company.
Right.
So I have quite a lot of contact over the last few years with those companies. I think what's important is that the work that is made is reflective of its time. And I think it's interesting you point out those people because they were working through the 80s
yeah.
when there was a lot of dissent and a lot
and,
of confusion.
And response to AIDS in their work as well.
Absolutely, really direct. And I think that, I mean, I choose to make, well, I guess Michael makes movement-led work. I also kind of deal with the body in motion rather than creating a theatrical narrative. But I do want to be looking, increasingly I'm looking politically at how, you know, what information there is even in the simplest thing. You know that there's already political information with how someone enters the stage, what they're the music doing, are they doing the same action at the same point? There's kind of gentle politics. So I guess I'm not making a kind of absolute comment, but I'm aware that the decisions that I do make already have political information in them. So I'm kind of getting wiser to that by the day.
So you are based in Brighton, hurrah. Does that feed into your work at all?
I'm in Peacehaven.
Peacehaven feed into your work at all?
Not a question you ask very often.
I know. I live somewhere which is really lets me kind of totally drop down and chill out, actually, because I'm often working and travelling around different countries, mostly around Europe. So the place that I choose to live is really about kind of stopping. But actually, I do live like right on the cliff edge. And the last piece I made was a duet with James, the composer, about the chalk cliff where I live. So that was a lot more, the landscape is really affecting me then. And this work is a little bit different, I suppose.
So I guess that was a yes, wasn't it?
well done.
You've been named as an associate artist at Brighton Dome and Brighton Festival. Wow. I haven't got a clue what that means, but I guess you have.
I think it's a strong and stable position.
Hey! Oh, no.
I had to try and get it in somehow. Yeah, so I think it's still to be kind of worked out. This is a very new relationship and it's kind of being launched with this performance. So over the next few years, as they develop the building, I guess I'll be invited in to kind of take part in those conversations about how that can be developed. And also they would be helping me develop my new work. So I don't quite know what's next after this work. It's all been so intense getting this ready, but I'm so delighted to have this relationship with a venue where they can actually support you with technical time, and they're a really nice team. I love them.
So the Bright Field premieres on Thursday at the Dome. Still tickets left?
There are still tickets left, but get booking because there's early slots through the kind of late afternoon for the first part, and then the second part I think starts at 8 p.m.
Fantastic. Well, Theo Klinkhardt, thank you very much for joining us, and good luck with your career as a strong and stable associate artist at Brighton Dome Festival.
I'm happily weak and wobbly.
Thanks very much for joining us on Radio Reverb. Cheers. In a few minutes' time, we're going to be hearing about the Gabriels. Before that, more Brighton music. This is Emoticon featuring Cordelia Gartside.
Oh,
which is something that we don't have. That's Emoticon featuring Cordelia Gartside, more Brighton music. You're listening to the Brighton Festival Show on Radio Reverb with Rebecca Sandals and Melita Dennett. And The Gabriels is a show which follows on from the Apple Plays in 2015's Brighton Festival. And that's where the audience eavesdrops on an American family as they discuss the political issues of the day. This time around, it's been updated to the run-up to the election of Donald Trump. And Kefi Chadwick has been to see it. Welcome to Radio Reverb, Kefi.
Thank you very much.
I gave a tiny outlinette of the plays there. I say plays because there are actually three of them. Can you flesh out the concept a bit more?
So there's three plays, and each of them's an hour and 45 minutes, and each play revolves around the preparation and, of a meal by this family. So you the play starts with one of the brothers, two brothers and a sister, and their mother, and they're sort of the core of the family, and then they have the brother's wife. And also the older brother's widow. So the elder brother's just died, and it's there. They've just discussed his ashes, and it starts with that. But it's sort of set against the premise of the year in the American election. So it's the first play is about the selection of Hillary. The second one is about the TV debates, and the third one is the night of the election. And when these were performed in America, they were performed on the night of the election. They didn't know who'd won when they first performed. So they came out of the theatre, and then they obviously found out later that night who had won. But there's a wonderful line, which is in the third play, which is, I think something very bad is about to happen, which obviously is prophetic.
Has it actually been rewritten since the election of Trump?
It's as is, because it's really, I mean, it's a political play, but it's not, it's where the personal and the political really meet. And it's about the family, and it's about them preparing a meal and talking about their own economic circumstances and their own relationships and the grief and loss of their brother. And then within that is kind of sort of the chat about Hillary and what she was like as a politician.
So if you're not massively enthusiastic about American politics, is actually as a way of looking in on family life in America, it does that.
It's absolutely brilliant for that. I mean, I think what it shows you, what it's really about is about how the death of the American dream and the idea that, you know, there was the land of milk and honey was possible, and about how that's no longer possible, and that is told through the prism of this family. So it's not all about senators and voting and Congress and really complicated things that we don't have here. So it's very relatable.
It doesn't sound too jolly from that description.
Do you know what? It's quietly heartbreaking, but beautifully full of love and hope, I think, at the end, about family and connection and how we connect to each other.
Yeah, don't give it away.
Sorry.
It's okay.
But it is...
Yeah, we do know who got elected, though, don't we?
Yes, but it is... I mean, it is quietly heartbreaking, yes, but in the most beautiful way, and it's fascinating. I mean, I could have watched another one really happily, and I go to theatre a lot, and I am bored a lot. I thought this was completely riveting every second. There wasn't a second you tuned out or weren't engaged. So it's an extraordinary feat of writing, actually, in performance.
Because I saw one of the Apple plays, and it's such an interesting concept devised by the writer, Richard Nelson. Because, as you say, it personalises politics. And obviously, politics is affecting our everyday life. And I just think, you know, that was an incredibly simple but effective idea of discussing these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's quite a feminist play, because it's actually about there's only one male character in it and the rest are all women, and it's about the impact of politics on their lives, which I think is an incredibly interesting way to look at politics.
Now, you saw all three.
I did.
They are on separate evenings. Yes. I know someone who's going to see just one of them, and if, you know, I'm sitting there going, I can't go to all three.
Yeah.
How do they work as solo pieces?
I mean, I think they would work as solo pieces, definitely, because they're structured around the idea of the preparation of a meal, and they all have a kind of big revelation in them, and they all have a moment of resolution. So they do work as standalones, but I think if you saw one, you would just be itching to see the others. It's like watching a bit of a box set and then going, I won't watch any more of that. So
I mean, as a feat of acting, though, that's really quite impressive, isn't it? To learn three separate shows.
The actors are absolutely extraordinary, I have to say. It's some of the finest performances I've ever seen.
Did you like it?
No, not really, no. No, I just thought it was one of the best pieces of theatre I've ever seen, I would say, quite.
Wow.
And I've been going to theatre, you know, several times a week for years, and it really was
You're practically kind of wanting to tell everyone,
should go and see, because I think what happens with political theatre, particularly in this country, is it becomes very didactic, it becomes very male, it becomes very ranty, and people, the only people who go are people who already agree with the premise of it. And I think that this is a play that could change your view and change your mind maybe a more liberal take on the world. So I think that's what we need more now. So, yeah, I think it's a very powerful piece of work.
And it's on at the Attenborough Centre, or the old Gardner Arts, as was much loved and now revived. I would imagine it works really well in that environment because it's quite an intimate environment.
I think it being in the Attenborough Centre is one of the makings of the piece, because I think if it was in a Pross Arch, a more traditional space, I think it wouldn't be as living and breathing as it is. I think the fact it's on three sides, so you really do feel like you are looking in or from the outside on every dimension of this family. I think that makes it even stronger as a piece of drama.
So I think it gets 5 stars from you.
It does get five stars from me.
There was a negative. The negative was that there's only 3, not 4.
Ah, okay.
So I worked with friends and we were all writers and performers, so there were sort of 5 of us, and we all came out and said, I could have watched more, I could have seen more. So that's praise indeed from, you know, a big group of people who watch a lot of work.
There we go. So that's The Gabriels. It's at the Attenborough Centre up at University of Sussex. 5 stars from our reviewer, Keffi Chadwick. Thank you very much, Keffi, for joining us on Radio Reverb.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Going to be going back to the second part of our feature on The Hum. But first of all, more Brighton music. This is Moon Over Sun. More Brighton music on Radio Reverb. That's Brighton's Moon Over Sun, and the track is Lil Echo. This is the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals.
So let's go back to the Hum app again. It takes you around familiar locations in Brighton and gets you to see them in quite a different way. Our reporter Holly Simpson met one of its creators, Nick Sanduland, and some of the people who've tried out the Hum for themselves.
We've had an interesting experience with the Hum because normally we do performances. When I say we, this is Flexer and Sanduland, the company that I have with El Flexer. We normally do performances inside theatres, and we're taking it outside this time. And we're also using some new technology, although it's pretty old nowadays, but it's quite an interesting crossover with audiences, because most people who come along to an app-based work are usually those slightly techno-savvy people. Other crowds that come along to theatrical dance-based work aren't necessarily the same audiences. So it's quite revealing, really, just seeing that crossover. And today we've had slightly more performance orientated people coming along trying to figure out how to use an app. So that's been a learning process, but they've all been doing it, and they've been if they couldn't work out an app themselves, they've been borrowing other people's ones, and they've been gaining another viewpoint, which has been very satisfying to see.
What do you want people to take away from this piece, from this experience?
Well, I think it's another view of something that's familiar. That's the key thing, really. Sometimes institutions like galleries and theatres provide a bit of a barrier. Quite often we get people coming along to a dance event, and the usual thing is, I don't know much about dance, and in a very apologetic manner, which is a real shame, because it shouldn't be that way. It's really... We like people to be curious and to, you know, to find out and to investigate. But the institution does get in the way sometimes. And in this situation, we haven't got an institution. It's just go out onto the streets and have a look around you and put on these glasses, in a way, these metaphorical glasses that give you a different viewpoint of something familiar. And the commentaries that you hear on the headphones are written by dance practitioners and people who either practice the art form or write about the art form. So they're articulate and observational in a particular way. But we've told them to look at everyday movement, everyday interactions that we all do. So it's a familiar territory. So hopefully when people come along to this and experience it, they might revisit or see these places in a new light. So it's just that. It's just being able to give it another viewpoint and to draw notice to those places that we often pass by.
How did you find the experience of the Hum?
Well, one of the lovely things is that each one of the recordings takes you to a different place. So some of them I found quite magical, and other ones were less magical. There's something about seeing a place in a new way that this helps you do. So I love the ones that particularly asked you to experience a new thing, like the opening and closing of doors at the Leisure Centre. I don't think I'll ever see, you know, automatic doors in the same way again. Or the very first one at Brighton Station, where it says, look at the people. And those ones that were asking you to look at the way that people walked, because we all walk in our own individual idiosyncratic ways, and the idea of seeing that as a performance I really loved. And then doing one in the toilet. That's really interesting. So I love the imagination behind all of the different locations. And, you know, I don't know Brighton all that well, and I just think it would be really interesting also to do it in a place that you knew really well, so you'd see it in a different way. I really enjoyed it.
What would you say was the most successful thing about it?
Well, for me, the most effective thing was seeing people in a different light. I know when I walk back to the station now, because I'm not from Brighton, to get a train, I'll be looking at people a little differently and noticing their walks and noticing how they're holding themselves. And in the very first one, it talked about rhythm of the steps and holding a forehead high. I'll be noticing those things. I thought some of it was just so beautifully written that some of those images will stay in my mind. So it was the combination, I think, of having kind of a personal experience in a public place and then the really lovely writing that, you know, the escalator one that I've just listened to now, looking down on an escalator and where people choose to stand in an escalator. And the fact, I've never thought about this before, that there are no clocks in a mall. I mean, there must be a reason for that. But that timelessness, each one of them that I experienced had a kind of a timelessness about it that I really enjoyed.
And that report on The Hum was by Holly Simpson, and The Hum app runs through to Sunday around Central Brighton, and you can download it for free at brightonfestival.org.
I actually think you can download the app and you can use it beyond the end of festival. So if you're thinking, oh, I haven't got time this week, try and find some time because it's great.
Yes, it is.
But B, then just download it and you can use it in the future.
Well, I didn't know that, so I've just learnt something through listening to Radio Reverb.
Well, that's what we aim to do here on the Brighton Festival special show, which you've all been listening to, you, me and I and everyone out there in Radio Land, Melita, learning something.
Stop, you're giving me the willies.
Are you feeling a little less stable now?
Yes, I'm feeling wobbly.
Oh, OK. Well, I wanted to knock the strong and stable out of you by the end of the show.
You succeeded.
I've succeeded in doing so. You've been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with her, Melita Dennett, and me, Rebecca Sandals, here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, DAB, that is, and online. We've been on air Monday, and we're on air through till Friday, because it is the last week of festival. And the festival show's 5 to 6pm, repeated 10pm and 8am.
And we're kindly supported by the Brighton Festival. And thank you to Thameslink as well for supporting our reporters. And thank you very much to all this week's guests and to our reporter, Holly Simpson. From me, Melita, we're going to see you at the same time tomorrow. So from me, Melita and Rebecca, toodle pip. And I'm going to play you out with Brighton's Mock and Two Door.
Bye.